This is the second class on qualifications of elders. I remind you that we're putting this online, and we've traditionally talked about this at least two times when we have appointed elders, and because of our time frame with the story study, this just seemed to work out a bit better. So just remind you, I know that you have it on your refrigerator door, but in case it's fallen off and you've covered it up with something from the kids, I remind you of the timeline, which is you have until Sunday, April the 6th, which is a week from Sunday, to turn in names. You received cards in the mail. And if you lose that card, you can pick up another one. You just need to remember to sign it. And you put that in a box that I'm sure we will have outside the doors this coming Sunday, or you can mail them back in. And then when the elders get all of those cards by Sunday the 6th, then they will start that very next Wednesday kind of going through the process, which really is one of discernment. It's not, okay, who are the top three voters? Who were the top three vote getters? You certainly do start at the top, but it just has a different feel. You just got to trust me on this. It just has a different feel than that. So they go through that process, and we probably could do this more quickly and be done by June the 1st, but frankly, this just makes us have extra time. So you go through the process. Well, who do we want to talk to? And then you talk to this person, and then he said, well, give me a couple of weeks to think about it. And then maybe he wants to come back in with his wife and talk again. And so it winds up taking a bit longer than you might expect. And so that's why we've got we've allowed plenty of time. And then also, in terms of, we added one extra week just because we didn't want to ordain elders on a holiday weekend, so that bumped us back to June the 1st. And the fact is, if it takes a little longer than that, then we'll just scratch it and go later than that. But most likely, we will be ordaining these elders on the 1st, but not before we've had you have 2 weeks to turn in scriptural reasons, and which is, of course, is in the Bible. Whenever that is, so we'll keep you up to date. Remind you that I'm asking you to join us in prayer, and I'm so thankful I had the little tone on my computer, because I was at my desk and it little kind of beeped, and it's like, what do I have at 12? And I looked over. Oh yeah, that was your idea. So if you've actually, it was one of the elders' ideas, So if you have that capability, put that on your phone and join with us in prayer on Sunday. All right, I want to start with the questions. I received just a few questions, and I want to start with the questions that I received this week, and then I'm going to go through what I have down on my notes as general observations. So first, somebody said sent me an email. Well, Chris, I got three guys in mind. Should I, tell them that I'm thinking about putting their name down? And the answer is, well, if you want to, fine. I personally have never done that. I don't think it has anything to do with the fact that I'm the preacher, and if I went to Joe Blow and said, I'm putting your name down, that he might feel a little extra pressure. I think even if I weren't the preacher, I just think I probably wouldn't. On the other hand, I'm pretty sure, and he's not here to defend himself, but I'm pretty sure that Paul Locke has done that, I'm almost certain I've heard Paul say to somebody, well, if you feel like you think somebody's qualified, then you need to tell them you're putting their name down. So on that one, it just depends. It cuts both ways. In one way, it kind of tells this person, maybe you need to think about this. And then at the same time, they may feel, and frankly, I've never talked to a guy on the receiving end of this comment either, but they may feel a certain sense of pressure of, oh my goodness, no, I'm not going, oh, I can't, oh, I can't believe they. So, but the answer is, yeah, whatever. Gary, I just answered your question, man. Okay, so now that we've all got that, let's go on to the next question. Which I did a preacher version of what I said in the email, which is, it just depends. If it's a pal of yours, sure. So, whatever you want to do. Any elder want to reply to that? Can anybody even remember? I know, Brother Waller, I know you can't even remember when you became an elder. So maybe somebody a little more recently. Did anybody say anything to you, Ronnie? Like how many? 5 to 10 people. And all right, so for the tape, I'm asking Ronnie, who became an elder 2.5 years ago. He says 5 to 10 people said something to him. And so is that a good thing, bad thing? Hadn't never really thought about it or what? Okay, so Ronnie gave like four reasons. They probably were in alphabetical order. To sum up for Ronnie, who had 5 to 10 people say something to him, it was an affirming process. It was thought-provoking. It at least forewarned him, hey, maybe something's going to come down the pike. I need to start thinking about this. And so for Ronnie, having 5 to 10 people say something to him was a very affirming process. The only other negative I can think of is 5 people say something to you and you never get a phone call. Well, what's wrong with me? Well, and the answer may be the only 5 people who put you down also talk to you. And 5 isn't going to cut it. So I have heard that every now and then over the last 15 years, somebody, when it's all over, well, I kind of thought, and I don't know that anybody ever diplomatically said, you know, it just so. But anyway, so that would be the only downside to that. I'm glad I asked you, Ron. That was very good. Here's the second question. I like this one. You mentioned how time-consuming this role could be. Why? I understand the weekly meetings and the visiting folks, but please explain what else they do. The person who sent me this has a heart of gold. So they did not mean like, I mean, how hard is this? They did not mean it that way. I think that at least for this person, they're surmising, okay, they got a weekly meeting, and, you know, maybe they go see somebody every now and then. Is there, like, a whole lot of other stuff that I'm unaware of? So it was a genuine question. I would start with, that is a lot. 3 out of 4 Wednesdays, which is a standard meeting. We did not meet last week. Met this week, so 3 out of 4 Wednesdays there's a meeting. A couple of elders have gone down to Vandy to visit with the Caskies. In addition to that, there is also, frankly, the expectation of showing up at stuff that you may not would have felt compelled to show up at. It's like you don't have a kid. You don't have a little one. You don't have a grandchild who lives in town. You may or may not come to dinner at Bethlehem, but you at least think about it. There's this expectation of, should I at least, like, show up and let them know I'm supportive? You don't have a 5th or 6th grade boy, but you at least think about, am I going to go to the 5th and 6th grade worship service on Sunday night? I kind of think I ought to be there. So there is that expectation. Now, that is not to say that every elder decides on every one of these events, because y'all know all 10 or 11 of them aren't at dinner at Bethlehem. All 10 or 11 weren't at the Timothy class. But all 10 or 11 are thinking about every time one of those events. It's a conscious decision. Do I need to be there or not? So there's that level of expectation. Then there's also the meeting with new members. Every elder, every new member meets with two elders. That's usually taking place on a Sunday morning during Bible class, sometimes on Wednesday evening. So that's another agenda item that's been added. And I'll talk a little bit more about what's going on in standard meetings or average meetings here in just a second. Then there are the phone calls that you get. And, you know, I mean, I should have maybe asked the elders in the meeting just now, how many calls do you get in a month? Almost every week, it's, I got a Good Samaritan request. And for those of you who are not quite as aware, a Good Samaritan fund is when some of our members, when our members get in a financial need, the elders oversee a fund, and we distribute money out of that fund. And the rule is, which has served the eldership very well for over a decade, if somebody has a need that's only $500, then you just decide, and you call Jason Thompson, tell them, cut a check, they'll be by tomorrow afternoon. If it's $1,000 or less, you got to call an elder pal. Hey, would you go in halves with me on this one? And so, truly, two elders can decide to give somebody $1,000, and we're not convening a meeting. So you're getting these kind of phone calls, Good Samaritan phone calls. You're getting, I just need somebody to talk to phone calls. But I don't know how many of those a month. How many calls you get a month, Ted?
Now a lot of it's text messages, too.
All right. Okay, but it's, so if you're counting text stuff, somebody's texting you?
Five or six.
Okay, so at least a phone call a week. So that's on top of the meeting, and you went to a funeral home Sunday afternoon down Spring Hill, and you met with somebody on a Sunday morning, and you feel a little guilty because you're not going to some Tuesday night thing up at the building. I mean, you don't go, but you at least feel guilty. Elders also oversee an area. Some of them you're very familiar with. We've always had a youth elder. There's always been a missions elder. Well, every elder has an area that they oversee. Some of them are more demanding than others. Some of them require them to spend time, committee meetings, and so forth. And then other times, frankly, it's you meet with your coordinating deacon once a year. He's doing a great job. Peace out. See you later. But that's not true for every one of those. There are some of these areas where an elder is very much so involved. Now, the addition of the coordinating deacons a decade ago has been a great, great thing. So the coordinating deacons are doing a lot of the day-in, day-out stuff that elders used to be involved in. So they would want me to mention that very definitely, how thankful they are for the working relationship with coordinating deacons. But you still are kind of overseeing things. Let's see. And there's probably, what did I leave out? Is any obvious, here's kind of an here's something that's happening every month that I leave out?
Whatever passion you had before you became an elder may continue.
Okay. So you already were engaged in something. So, Ted's involved with a ministry where they have this thing for women getting out of prison. Well, Ted didn't stop doing that when he became an elder. And, several of our elders teach, are great teachers. Some of our elders teach once in a great while. They're simply fulfilling roles of giftedness. One shift that I've seen in 30 years is an increased emphasis on shepherding. Elders are supposed to be a shepherd. Lynn Anderson wrote a book called They Smell Like Sheep, and he talks, I mean, that's the whole premise of the entire book. Elders aren't supposed to be board of directors. Elders are supposed to be shepherds. And that really has been, in my career, a dramatic shift. If somebody was in the hospital in 1981, Brother Moffitt was not there within 24 hours, they were griping. They expected, and this is no exaggeration, they expected not one elder to show up. They just didn't. Elders met on Wednesday night and decided what color to paint rooms and whether to fire the youth minister. That's what elders did. And preachers did all the counseling. Preachers did all the hospital visitation. And elders, I don't want to overstate. I mean, elders would show up at funerals. But, I truly don't remember, unless it was their pal. Elders just weren't expected to show up at those kind of events. And preachers were. And if preachers didn't, they got dinged. There's been a shift over the last 30. It's been more so over the last 15 to 20, where congregations just kind of expect elders to be more engaged in that kind of stuff. They aren't shocked. They are pleased, but they're not shocked when an elder shows up when they're at the hospital. They're kind of looking for at least a couple of them to show up at the funeral home. And I'm just saying that expectation was not there 30 years ago. So with that increased expectation of shepherding, what it results with is an increased sense of burden. Like Acts 20, 28, but keep watch over the flock and ravenous wolves come in and stuff. And so elders today have an increased sense of burden for shepherding the flock and for being engaged in people's lives. And they simply feel that burden more than the guys that I started out with in 1980. I mean, they were fine men. I mean, they were great men. Brother Beatty was a great, great elder, but he just didn't have that same sense of burden that elders do today. So that would be the other thing. Well, what do they do? I would say it's in the emotional part of it as well. There's an emotional investment, and frankly, some guys are better at it than others. They just are. Some guys it just eats them up, it wears them out, and they got to cash in their chips or they kind of withdraw. Some guys can help and can differentiate the problem and the person from themselves, and they are still tender-hearted, but they can differentiate. And then other guys, they feel this sense of burden. I've told our guys about once every 2 years they'll start talking about, we don't know everybody, and we don't do this and we don't do that. And about every 2 years, I have to tell them, guys, trust me, you are doing so much more than guys were even thinking about doing in the 80s. Cut yourself some slack. I don't know if they listen or not. Probably they don't. But that's an emotional investment that sometimes you don't even know it's coming until you get in there. And then it's like, people disappoint you. You work with people, and then they still wind up, running out on their wife, and you met with them for 5 times over the previous 3 months, and he still leaves. It's just kind of hard to take. And then you do hear about the, I was going to say CRAP, but I can't because I forgot it's being taped. But you hear about that stuff. Okay? And, I talked to so-and-so. I mean, we literally, 30 minutes ago, an elder's telling us about extended conversations with a member, and it's bad, but I'm not at liberty to say. And that, so you have that. So folks disappoint you. You find out about the unseemly things that other people don't know about. I mean, y'all know about them because it happens in everybody's household. I mean, every family has this. I mean, every family's got abuse and alcoholism and all that other nasty stuff. Well, that just kind of wanders into the room on Wednesday evening. And sometimes the word I have written down here in my notes is draining. So sometimes it's pretty draining. You go through that list. And we do occasionally have to remind ourselves of all the good stuff going on. Because we'll go through the prayer list, you know, and it seems like everybody's dying and everybody's divorcing. And, you know, and it's just all bad. And we do have to remind ourselves of there's a host of good things going on. It's not like that every week, but some weeks it's kind of like, man, I kind of wished I'd been sick tonight, so I could have skipped. And I don't think I'm over-dramatizing that. And so of all that stuff they do, I would say that one is pretty high on the list. You just feel more responsible, even when you aren't. You just feel it. All right, I had another question. What about this wives or women thing in 1 Timothy 3? So let me look at that. If you have your Bibles, in the list of qualifications in 1 Timothy, deacons, this verse 8, deacons likewise must be serious, not double-tongued, not indulging in much wine, not greedy for money. They must hold fast to the mystery of the faith with a clear conscience. Let them first be tested. Then if they prove themselves blameless, let them serve as deacons. Women, likewise, must be serious, not slanderers, but temperate, faithful in all things. Let deacons be married only once. Let them manage their children and households well. For those who serve well as deacons gain a good standing for themselves and a great boldness in the faith that is in Christ Jesus. Now, does anybody have a translation that has deaconess in verse 11, or does everybody have women? Is every translation women, really? Wives? Wives in what? NIV? No deaconess? Women deacons? What kind of weird version have you got, Gary? RSV? Oh. Yeah. I'm the New Revised. Down in the footnotes. Women, their wives, or women deacons. Okay. So all you Greek scholars, what would you guess the word is there? What would you guess the word is there? It's not that. Yeah. You would think it's servant. It's women. Just regular old Gennai case. Regular word for women. So the question is, so what does that mean? So you have deacons, and then out of the blue, you have women, and then you have deacons again. So your choices really are those three. Women, okay, what does it mean by women? Well, then choices are women deacons. I mean, Phoebe is called a servant or a deacon, Romans 16:1. So it's not like that would be radical for Paul to be addressing a group of deaconesses. But he could have used the female version of deacon, which is just a word for servant, diakonos. So, I mean, he could have used diakone if he wanted to, but he used the word for women. So it's either a woman serving in some kind of woman role as a deacon, or it's wives of deacons, or I guess that's really it. It'd be those two. And frankly, I don't really know that it matters. It seems a little odd to just be talking to wives in the middle of talking about deacons. So why did he feel the need to talk to deacon wives and not elder wives? Or if he is talking about women deacons, why did he use the word for woman deacon? I think it's one of those passages, honestly, what you decide it means is kind of what you want it to mean, really. I mean, scholars would deny that, but I really just don't know that's that big a deal, because remember, one of the most restrictive designations or text about women in ministry is in 1 Timothy, right? I mean, 1 Timothy 2 is where it says men should pray, lifting up holy hands. Women should dress themselves modestly and decently in suitable clothing, not with their hair braided or with gold, pearls, or expensive clothes, but with good works, as is proper for women who profess reverence for God. Let a woman learn in silence with full submission. I permit no woman to teach or to have authority over a man she is to keep silent. For Adam was formed first, then Eve. So whatever, if it's a woman deacon, whatever he's saying in chapter 3, I mean, it's got to match up with chapter 2. Because he's pretty restrictive there. Which, by the way, that chapter 2 has always been interesting to me, because we pick and choose about what still stays in this passage. She needs to learn in silence with full submission. You better believe it. She needs to keep silent. But braided hair, nah, that was just first century. And expensive clothing, well, how expensive are we talking about here? So anyway, we do some picking and choosing. So that really doesn't answer the question about exactly to whom he's speaking. But, I mean, he does say similar kinds of things. Serious, not slanderers, temperate, faithful in all things. So the wife of an elder, what are we supposed to be looking for? I mean, I think it's pretty fair to say, well, whatever this woman in the church that Timothy was appointing, whether she was a deacon or not, those four words look pretty good myself. So that's in terms of the what's in that text. Now, Chris talking, I think the wife of an elder at least needs to have two key components. And frankly, it's just the first two I thought of. I probably could have come up with 10. One is not a gossip. Two is keep confidence. You can't be a gossip. It'll slay you. It will just kill you if you're running your mouth. Grady, because the sister is dead and gone, I'm not going to name her by name, but Grady had an elder's wife in Cincinnati who was just terrible. I mean, she was awful. And why they permitted it for multiple years, I don't know, but they did. They put up with it. So you can't be a gossip. And then one thing that you will learn the hard way, elder and elder's wife alike, if you ever are griping about something, griping about something on May 30 is one thing. Griping about something in public on June the 2nd, when you're an elder or your husband's an elder, that's a different matter. Because I'm telling you, people listen to you differently then. They just do. And you don't even know till it's turned around and bitten you. Because that's an elder's wife complaining about something at Vacation Bible School. Well, it's the same kind of stuff you've always said. I mean, you're good-hearted. You're not really griping. You're just saying that you thought they should have had better control of the kids. Well, maybe it's even true. Maybe what you said is absolutely true. But I'm telling you, it will come back to bite you. So you do have to remember that people do see you differently, and they listen. And maybe they listen sometimes too critically, but they do listen. And then keeping a confidence. Elders tell their wives some things they don't tell them. I tell Vicki some things I don't tell her. I mean, there's no, I don't think there's a hard and fast rule. Sometimes elders do need the advice of a good wife. I mean, it's not just that they're running home and tattling. They really do need to know, sweetie, what do you think about this? And then there are other occasions where you never tell them. A, you really shouldn't, and B, you don't want to burden them, so you don't tell them. But you're still going to find out stuff. You're going to find out stuff before everybody else does. So you have to be able to keep a confidence. And I certainly can testify from my end. That's one area in 34 years. Vicki has never failed me. Never, ever. She's never broken a confidence. So, I left the Bible 3 minutes ago. This is just Chris talking. I still think I'm right, but it's just Chris talking. Although it does say slanderer, that's kind of in the gossip column, so that kind of counts. Okay, here's just some observations. Observation number one is much of this is non-biblical, extra-biblical, common sense. This is what we do here, but don't ask us to prove it by what Scripture says. It's to compare what Timothy had to do when he's appointing elders, what Titus had to do when he was appointing elders in Crete, to what we do today. It's just apples and oranges. It's not just 2,000 years difference. It's everything. They didn't have church buildings. They didn't serve the Lord's Supper the way we do. They did not have paid preachers. They might have had a paid elder, but they certainly did not have paid preachers. They didn't have youth ministers. They didn't have light bills. They didn't have to get liability insurance. They didn't have to get insurance for their employees. They didn't have spring retreats. They did not have children's ministry. They didn't have junior camp. They did not have vacation Bible school. They did not celebrate Easter. They did not have a church bulletin. They did not. I mean, if you ever thought about that, just go through the bulletin. How much of this is first century? Not very much. Now, that doesn't necessarily prove anything. I just sometimes think we forget. We think we're doing it the way they did it in the Bible, when the fact is, we've got basic Bible principles, but we're doing it the way we think is best. But there's no proven by what Scripture says. So anyway, that part's for free. That really wasn't the point. Okay. All right, here's a question. I have been the minister here since August of 1997. How many different sets of elders have I served with in 16 and a half years? And by set of elder, that means, you know, I've got, how many do I have now? I've got 10 now. So when we add some in June, that'll be another set. How many different groups of elders have I served with in 16 and a half years? Just take a guess. Five? Six? Nine? Keep going. Thank you, Brother McCarley, for going on the outside there. 13. I frankly was shocked. I couldn't believe it. 13. Well, how can that happen? Well, we did the reaffirmation process. So the group I came in with in 97, three resigned in January. So that's two. We reaffirmed and got a new batch. So we were down to six. End of 98, that's three. We had Attorney Stevens, that's four. John Bornstein came in later that same year, that's five. We added elders in 2003. We added elders in 2006. We added elders in 2011. And then you have sprinkled in there where an elder or two will resign. The longest, the exact same group has met on Wednesday evening. And this again, I know this is just, I'm a sucker for details, is 3 years, 5 months. I couldn't believe it. 3 years, 5 months. Now, on paper, it was longer than that, but we had an elder who was taking an unannounced sabbatical at that time. So technically, it was a different group in the room on Wednesday evenings. So I have served with 6 elders twice, 7 elders once, 8 elders twice, 9 elders 3 times, 3 different times, 10 elders 2 different times, 11 elders 2 different times, 12 elders 2 different times. We have chosen to not do term limits. You're an elder for 6 years, and then you roll off for a year. We have simply chosen not to do that. We might choose to do that at some point in the future, but we've chosen not to do that. There is, it seems to me, a certain stigma when an elder resigns, even the fact that we almost always use that word, resign, instead of step down or it's going to move into something else. It just feels that way. It should not be. Elders are not elders for life. Whoever says yes this coming June, that does not mean you're signing up till we roll you out here to the funeral home wagon right out there 30 years from now. It does not mean that. Will some guys wind up serving 20 years? Yeah. But some, it may 5 may be the perfect time. Some may be 10. As I've said, it certainly is a draining time. Sometimes circumstances change in your life. So it does not, it's not necessarily a bad thing. We have had elders have unannounced sabbaticals. We've had guys say, you know, I'm burning at both ends. I can't do this anymore. Just come back when you're ready. We've never felt the need to say, Brother Jones is stepping down, you know, for 6 months. I mean, it just seems silly. So we've not done that. And by the way, the last 2 or 3 guys who have stepped down, we've known about that for a year. So I know y'all hear it and you go, oh, John Bornstein. Well, John told us a year ahead. Guys, this is my last year. Well, we weren't going to announce in January, John Bornstein's toast come December. But really, I mean, we knew for a year that this was coming. And so truly for all 3 of the last 3. Number of elders, we've just chosen to go with the 10 to 12 range. Some churches our size, a little bigger, have as many as 40 elders, which just makes my head hurt. But if you have that, and the reason churches do that is, okay, we got 40 shepherds. Sweet. But what you have to wind up doing then is you have to have an executive committee, because 40 people can't make a decision about anything. So you have an executive committee. The tension with the Lynn Anderson and the whole they smell like sheep is that sounds great, but somebody's still got to mind the store. Somebody's still got to make decisions. You just do. And probably that means more to a minister who, like, does this for a living. To walk in that kind of vacuum where all these guys are out here just kind of shepherding and loving folks. Yeah, but somebody's got to decide something. All right, in terms of models of leadership, when I started out, elders called all the shots. And sometimes it was a sweet relationship with the ministers and staff, and then other times it was kind of challenging. But elders called all the shots. I mean, they hired the minister. They decided what color to paint things, whether the youth ministry could go on this particular activity, and so forth and so on. The elders. That was the elders' time, elders' version of leadership. And then some churches of Christ, not many, and most Southern Baptist churches have the senior pastor or the senior minister model. And that's where the senior minister's calling the shots. And he has a board that he kind of reports to, kind of like, frankly, a CEO of a nonprofit reporting to a board. And the CEO's running things. And if the board doesn't like it, they fire him and get another CEO. Well, a fair number of churches have that model to where a senior minister, and usually that guy also has an executive minister, and those two guys are running about everything. They're hiring and firing ministers, everything. And I do mean everything. lot of Southern Baptist churches, for example, they get a new senior pastor. It's kind of expected for the staff to offer their resignation, and then he decides whether he's going to keep you or not. So that's a senior minister model. A few churches of Christ have gone that direction, not many. I don't really think it's much of an improvement, but a few of them have done that to where, I mean, if the children's ministers are getting hired or fired, the elders aren't doing it. It's a senior minister. They've given that responsibility over to him. Our model is one of a partnership between elders, ministers, and coordinating deacons. So a lot of times we describe it as three legs of a stool. We have all three of those. Sometimes one leg may be a little wobbly or something, but we still got three legs on that stool. In some parts of our ministry, coordinating deacons are running the show. In some parts of our ministry, it really doesn't even fall under a coordinating deacon's responsibility, and it's staff-led. And sometimes it's not staff-led, and it's not coordinating deacon-led, and it's just some interested member. But we try to make it at least fit together. So those are how we go about doing things. And it really is a partnership that is built on trust. And the second that you lose a trust is the second that you're in trouble. And once you get trust, you really go out of your way. You really go out of your way to protect it, not abuse it. So ours is a system based on trust, not on distrust. One of the nicest things Paul Locke has ever said about me is, "Chris, you know, there's one thing I like about you." He said, "Whenever you like bring something, I know that you've never like worked anybody." Meaning, I've not gone to Gary or Ted, "Hey, gonna bring this up Wednesday night, you know, get in my corner." And that's simply an acknowledgement of trust. There aren't hidden agendas. If there is an agenda, it's out there on the table. And so once you have that, it really does, it makes for a sweet, sweet relationship. Elders make million-dollar decisions. Elders make policy decisions. Elders make decisions concerning the future. Staff and coordinating deacons, in terms of day-to-day, it's mostly staff. Capital campaign. We need a capital campaign to fund High Lake. I think that, honestly, now I can't remember. I think that came from staff. I think. So staff says we need to do a capital campaign. The elders talk about it all of, honestly, maybe 30 minutes. Maybe not even, I don't remember. It wasn't long. It wasn't quite a rubber stamp. But it was pretty close to a rubber stamp. But that was the decision. That's a million-dollar decision. So they made that decision, and then they handed that back over to staff. And actually, in that, it did wind up having one elder very much so involved in the day-to-day activities of the capital campaign. Then when those funds come in, we knew we needed to buy a couple of buses. Elders didn't look at a single bus. As you know, the elders never even going to get on that bus. So why are they going to mess with, what do we buy a bus? Do we buy a van? Seat belts? No. So that's Jason Pagel. So Jason Pagel's got a committee. And if he got approval, "Hey, guys, I want to buy," I think he said, "Here's what we're buying." But I really can't. Can you remember Jason Thompson? Okay, it's what I thought. So he just went and bought it. So if those vans break, now we know who to blame. Jason Pagel and his cute little committee. So elders decided, growing out of the listening process from the congregation 3 years ago, listening to God, elders decided in a retreat that coordinating deacons and staff and elders attended last February, that they, we believe, need to hire a women's minister. So, but notice what's happened. See, congregational input, meeting with coordinating deacons and ministers and staff and elders, and then the elders, a few months after that, decided we need to hire somebody. And so now let's form a committee. I don't know who decided, who initially proposed, but somebody did, and so proposed a committee. Jennifer Pagel's chairman of the committee. She has six or seven women on that committee. I'm on it. Jason Thompson's on it. And that committee will do all the work on that. When they narrow it down, my guess is they'll bring in one or two, and one or two women will meet with the ministers, they'll meet with the elders, and we'll all together decide. Or that this committee may just say, no, there's just one, head and shoulders, we're just going to bring in one, let's talk with her. And so the elders will hire, but I mean, that was kind of like the last step in really about six steps. So ministers, but then there are other times of like a youth resident. You know, we hired Tristan Wheeler. I bet you a lot of the elders didn't even know we had hired somebody until Jason said, hey, we hired somebody. Well, great. So, I mean, it could have been more involved, but, you know, Jason's been doing this for 16 years. Jason and Jennifer, they kind of know what they're doing. They've never dropped the ball yet. So, in terms of the elders, some of them have more of a micromanager in them than others. So they're not all equally laissez-faire. Hey, y'all have fun, kids, and we'll see you later. Some of them, I mean, they want to know a few more details. Some of them, if they never heard another detail for the remainder of their days, they really wouldn't care. So I don't want to paint too broad a brush. I mean, right now, it's 10 different guys, and there is a continuum. But the continuum leans toward, you know, we got coordinating deacons, we hired good people, we got confidence in them, and we're going to spend our time in these two or three different areas. Ministers meet monthly, and maybe the key thing ministers do is to try to keep from siloing, which at a big church, that happens all the time. Hey, I got an idea for a ministry. And then somebody goes off here and they're doing some kind of ministry, and they never consider the fact that it completely conflicts with this, and it doesn't have anything to do with anything else we're doing. And we want to have an entrepreneurial spirit, but we kind of have one at least a little calm in the chaos. And so ministers, one of the key things we do is to try to keep that. All right, well, how does that relate? Okay, somebody has this killer idea. Well, how does that relate to this? Would this fall under this? Would this fall? And of course, certainly a prayer. Typical meeting for elders, meet about three out of every 4 weeks. They rotate the chair. So if an elder ever makes an announcement, 9 out of 10 times it's because he's the chair that three-month period. So rotate every 3 months. So Paul Cates is rotating off next Monday. Ted, it's just alphabetical order. Ted Clark starts in April. So as we're making some kind of elder announcements, more than likely Ted will make most of those simply because he's the chair this time. Almost always start with people concerns. And we just go around the room. And it really is, I'm telling you, it really is sweet. Go around the room and, I talked so-and-so today, and, you know, her son's getting out of rehab, and I didn't know anything about it. And then the next person, I talked to this person, and then the next one, y'all heard anything about this couple? I heard they were having some trouble. Well, no, I'll get back with you on that one. And we go around the room. Sometimes it's just as inefficient as can be. It is. Some nights it'll take an hour. Well, what are y'all doing? Well, we're talking about all this mostly sad stuff. And we go around the room and we list them. And sometimes there's follow-up steps. Okay, I'll call them. I didn't know that. All right, I'll go to the funeral home tomorrow afternoon. And inevitably, somebody's given a report that I had absolutely no idea. Which, see, in a church of this size, you're going to have that. So we go around the room. Then there's agenda items. see, I don't even have, what was the agenda item? Well, wasn't much tonight. We actually spent most of the time in prayer. And then occasionally there'll be, okay, Jennifer's going to bring us a report on the women's minister search. And or we've got a coordinating deacon coming in. What the elders love to do more than anything else is pray for people. And they really like it when it's not a death and destruction, when it's just, hey, thank you so much for what you're doing in, and bring somebody in, bring a couple in, pray for them, surround them, pray for them. Had one of our single girls have to move back to her hometown. She hadn't been able to find a job, and it was her last Wednesday. Well, brought her in. Spent 15 minutes, prayed for her. That's what they're really good at. And I also happen to think that's a key component of what it means to be an elder. Three or four of them will go over to a member's house probably next Wednesday. One of our members who probably will be deceased by the end of the year. So three or four of them go over there next Wednesday night and pray for that person. So it's a praying bunch. So that's a typical meeting, 5 to 6:30. Inevitably, it runs late, and then we're all rushing down. Okay, I'm rushing down because I feel like if I miss a meal, I'm going to die. So so when you see us rushing down there at 6:30 or 6:40, like it was tonight. To wolf something down before class at 7. Half the time we're back after class. Tonight we're not, but half the time we are. Occasionally we meet to 10. Not as much we used to. That is better. Waller and Locke would tell you that when it used to be 11 and 12, and that was just murder. But I've noticed now, frankly, if you want their attention, you better do it before 9. Because about 9, the body language says, you know, it's about time to go. And that actually has improved. Frankly, it started to especially improve when Jason Thompson came and started setting the agenda. So don't ever think, oh, I know they're so busy. And don't ever think that. If anything, if you ever... just call Jason. I mean, he's the one setting the agenda. Just call Jason up. Hey, can I come in? And almost all the time, we'll work in the next Wednesday. We'll stay late to pray for somebody. So, and if I did this successfully, I went all the way up to 8 o'clock, so I don't have to take, yep, there you go. That was my plan. So I don't have to take any questions. So. All right. When it's good, it's just really, really sweet. Man, it's good. I mean, some nights are kind of depressing because you hear sad stuff. But when you know that you're all on the same page, or you're at least on the same opening in the book, you're all on the same page, and you're all pulling together, and you all want the same thing. It's just, man, it's good, it's good. So that's what we want to pray. Lord, bless us so we can keep being good. Lord, thank you for the blessings you give us. And Lord, I certainly thank you for shepherds that I'm serving with now and the hosts that have gone before and just a lot of other guys that I've served with here and then even... brothers that I've been privileged to serve with in other churches. Thank you for these good men and women, these wives who've supported in such a wonderful way. And Lord, I just ask you to bless us as we go through this process. You've been awfully good to us in the past. And we don't want to take that for granted. We really, really are thankful. And we pray, Lord, that you would be good to us this time. Bring us the right people. That can join our team and that we can just do good, wonderful, great things for you. And we ask this, Father, in Jesus' name, amen.